And then
he can call me Flower if he wants to.
That's the perversion.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like a seriously detached, odorous youngling.
Odorous youngling.
Yeah. And they're all like a year old and they're like, that skunk is gonna smash.
Welcome, applauders, to this month's podcast. I am Jen McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what we're reviewing because you already clicked on the thing.
2000's The Cell.
Duh.
Okay. Real talk, applauders. We recorded this already and the machine ate it. So you're getting to have a revamp of our first
30 minutes.
First 30 minutes. We're gonna catch you up to speed, and then there'll probably be a little click to our original recording. So we want to catch you up with our usual shenanigans, but if there's a difference in quality, or not quality. Your stuff is quality. That's why you're not getting that weird, bad 30 first minutes. But if there's a difference in tempo, you know, just roll with it, okay?
Yeah. That's like half of the first episode, and then it's going to be totally the same going through, the episode.
Yeah, yeah. So I just want to just put that out there. So if we refer to our past selves, which is your future self conversations, yeah, it happens. Yeah. It might happen. And I'd rather know than not know. And I'd rather like have that out of the way. Radical truth. It's good for all of us.
Oh, yeah. So, Naomi, how did you come to this movie?
Oh, well, Jen, this came out in the year of our Lord,
2080.
Yeah.
2080? 2080. AD. Sorry.
After that Jesus guy. AD, right?
Anuis Domine.
Yeah. Oh, don't with your Latin.
Well, I think they changed that because now you have like before Christian era and then you have the after Christian era.
Yeah, there's like, it's like ADE or something like that. A different, I've not put it in my brain hole and had it stick.
It changed while we were like growing up. So that's okay.
I like the more scientific term. We do think of the ancient world more like than 2000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That was a tangent in the first 30 seconds. Awesome.
Yeah.
The Cell, 2000. I don't think I saw this in the theater, but what did happen was probably at least 5 years later, I bought it on VHS. I never paid more than a dollar for a VHS, except for The Thief and the...
I know which one you're talking about.
Was it VHS? The Thief and the...
Cobbler?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good movie. And it is all of Aladdin. So... I've had it on VHS and I'd throw it into my VHS player because it was more convenient than like using a DVD player or watching TV, which easily distracts me. I could just throw in a tape and then I would art in front of it and I would look up and I'd be like, yes, beautiful. Yes. And I could skip all the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You really don't have to pay attention much to what people are saying. You can follow along with this movie pretty well, I think, without any dialogue in it.
Yeah, it is not a quippy one. It is certainly not as quotable. Well, okay, Vince D'Onofrio is quotable, but nothing else.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Because we got Vincent D'Onofrio, we got a Vince Vaughn, and we have a Jennifer Lopez.
But there's also, there's like another Vince, too. Somebody has a last name that's Vincent.
Okay.
I think there's four different variances of Vincent in this version.
Blah, 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 blah.
I knew you'd like the alliteration. Okay.
Anyway. So, Jen, how did you come to it?
Oh, well, Naomi and I were dating at this time, but I don't believe that we saw this together, which means that I saw it with my mom. I'm pretty sure I was able to see this movie by myself, but it would be still kind of creepy to walk into this movie by myself, I think. It's not any better to walk in and see it with my mom, because I'm pretty sure we walked out of that theater together and... she didn't look at me at all and just like, oh, that was a nice movie.
Your mom is so nice.
It's difficult to come out of a movie that has like some pretty raw BDSM imagery in it. and be okay standing next to your mom. And I don't know. It just seems kind of like it would have been uncomfortable at the time.
I went to a film festival with my dad, and I think I mentioned it before, but we had, you cram so many movies into a long weekend, and I was like, we just picked a very short film to fill in between larger, longer films that we were going to watch. And so we're like it's in Port Townsend, and they used every cafeteria from every school and filled it with movies. And so I remember these art house theater seats had been shoved into this really cramped room, and I'm literally elbow to elbow. Our elbows are touching. And then it was an indie film. And so there was a really real sex scene. And there's some guys humping on the, and I'm like, first of all, I hate the word humping. Sorry. You can bleep that if you'd like. But also it doesn't make any sense because it's the same thing as what they were doing. But I was touching my dad's elbow while watching this. And that's a memory that will never leave me.
Shock and Applaud, the podcast about awkward movies with your parents.
Minute five, guys.
Well, if there was going to be a movie that was good therapy for us, I guess it would have to be this movie that's about therapy.
It's true. How about you, Liz? How'd you get here?
I always heard about the movie, never really watched it. Watched it for the podcast, and I absolutely love the podcast for that reason. Seen some very interesting movies that I wouldn't necessarily watch. I probably won't watch it again, but, you know, it's. I wouldn't say that I don't like the movie. It's just like I enjoyed it while I watched it, but I'm not going to pull it off the shelves anytime soon to rewatch it.
It's not worth a purchase.
Right.
Might be worth the price of admission.
Yeah, I would say that it's a nice, like, if you haven't seen this movie and you're like, hey, I want to go ahead and, you know, watch a movie that might entertain me that I've never seen before. Sometimes you get into those moods, then, you know, try this out, because I like the imagery in this movie is just gorgeous.
Yes. And I would also say that if you like, and I say like, but whoosh, whoosh, air quotes, like serial killer motifs, mm-hmm. because anything that is, what is the word, aberrant to the human condition as we know it, like, you kind of want to stare at it twice as long, twice as hard. I mean, like, there's a reason people get obsessed with serial killers, because what is in your brain that makes you that way? And this is certainly, without being as deep as some, like, I think, okay, so in terms of, like, this is no bull in a china shop in terms of, like, knocking psychological facts out of the park or off the shelves or whatever mixed metaphor I'm using right now, but, like, it does, I think, visually give a way that a person suffering from similar disorders or this disorder, like the way that their brain knits things together. I think this film does incredibly well with that. Does it result in some fantastic dialogue? No.
No.
But is it like, wow, does it not give you the feeling of having places switch in dreams and, like, you know how, like, you dream jump?
Yeah, like as you're coming out of a dream into real life or just going in between dreams?
Well, yeah, okay. Kind of. Like, you're in the dream, you're pushing a shopping cart, but the sensation of pushing a shopping cart makes you remember shutting a dishwasher. And so all of a sudden you're like, now all of a sudden you're doing the dishes, mm-hmm. and you don't know how you got from pushing a shopping cart to doing the dishes. Wow, my dreams sound real interesting. That's not what I mean, but, like, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
This movie evokes emotion in a dreamlike way that I think is really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we have this film thanks to successes like Silence of the Lambs, but, like, they thought it was going to be like a gangbuster like that. And I'm not exactly sure the money made on Silence of the Lambs, but I think it's relatively, I mean, it's certainly more known
mm-hmm.
Than this film, but it was the predecessor to this. And they were like, yeah, we're going to make our money on this. And people were like, huh? And considering that it was going to be edgier, like the author of the screenplay was like, this final work does not look at all like my film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I want my movie made, not this, which had been through the mill in terms of, like, being refined by corporate, which always takes the grit off of a film, you mm-hmm. know? So, right.
And that almost sounds like a Sean fact.
Oh.
What is it? I don't know. It might not be a Sean fact, but I guess we'll find out when we get into Sean facts.
Oh, yeah, we should. I do love me some Sean facts.
You ready for some Sean facts?
Sean facts.
Sean facts. All right. Well, the budget for this film was $33 million, which isn't, like, an incredibly expensive film. Would either of you like to guess on this, the second recording, how much it actually made?
$2.15.
Times 50 million. basically. It was $100 million that it made in its full worldwide release in theaters.
Jen, that's so gross. It was a worldwide gross. That gem wasn't in the original recording. You're welcome. So they had to be happy with that money, but it wasn't enough for them to pursue it, I think, greatly. Although there is a sequel.
Right.
There is a direct-to-video sequel.
Direct-to-video.
I would say that if I can remember, if I put myself into the position of being in the year 2000, Jennifer Lopez was quite the hot item. And I wonder how many people saw this movie just because it had Jennifer Lopez in it.
She is the softest princess lady in this film.
I love her hair. I think I'm like maybe five different hairstyling products away from getting that kind of like tight curl. And it's just everywhere. I might have to cut my hair.
No.
But I know.
I mean, but like, okay, do it. Like, shave your head. Life is short.
Yeah. I have been thinking about shaving my head just to see what it would be like. But then I think winter's right around the corner. So maybe I'll save that for next year.
You want to wear a hat?
Ooh, I could save that for my 40th birthday. That's coming around the corner.
Ooh.
Happy birthday to me. Touch I'm going to shave all my hair. Sorry. That wasn't in the original recording either, applauders.
Let's go over some Sean Fact awards, because this movie did actually have some awards.
It would have to.
It won the Blockbuster Entertainment Award. Remember when Blockbuster was a thing?
I love Blockbuster.
Favorite actress, Jennifer Lopez.
J-Lo.
Fangoria Chainsaw Awards. You know, they're really high and distinguished.
I mean, I would be more honored by Fangoria knowing who I was than like the Oscars.
Right.
Best Score, Best Makeup and Creature Effects, and Best Supporting Actor, Vincent D'Onofrio.
That dark lip.
Mm-hmm.
You got good makeup.
Yeah.
That dark lip she has. Ugh.
Best High Work for Jill Brown, who was Jennifer Lopez's stunt double, and that was with the World Stunt Awards.
Huh.
So like when she's falling into the air and she's floating there, you know.
Oh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's lots of weird little things that she has to do in these unique little montage or vignettes.
It always reminds me of Princess Bride, the way you described it, because it's like I saw these four white horses and I thought there'd be four of us if we ever found that lady. Hello, lady. Right? And then she jumps and like,
right.
And the dress is like, yeah, it's like that, but in water.
Right.
Yeah. It does look a lot like that.
Huh.
All right. Here's some trivia for you about good old Vincent D'Onofrio. He later admitted that his wife refused to sleep in the same bed with him for 2 weeks after seeing his performance in this movie.
Can't blame her.
Valid.
Very valid. Also, Sean says the IMDb says that this movie is a remake of an episode of 1997's TV show called Sleepwalkers, starring Naomi Watts.
Mm.
However, this show only lasted one season of 9 episodes, and in fact, the Cell's screenwriter, Mark Protosevich, who is not listed as a writer on the show, has disowned this film. He wrote it, disowned the film.
Because it didn't look like his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the final film barely resembles his original script, which went under several rewrites from other uncredited screenwriters and Warner Brothers New Line Cinema executives. And that is probably all I need to get into before we start getting into plot, because then at that point we can dive into when some of these scenes start to resemble some real true surrealist art.
So as I do,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes, mm-hmm. I try not to step on Sean's factual toes. Factoids, because I was stepping on his toes. What I sometimes do is I will, I'll just Google it, especially if I'm like looking what medium we're going to watch it on, you know, like, we could only rent it. We had to spend $3, guys. Sorry. But as I pull up my Safari search on my phone, there it has those prompt questions, like similar questions asked, like, because I just wrote The Cell and it popped up everything I needed. But then it had a prompt question that was like, is The Cell scary? Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I know this film. I've watched this film. What are they going to say? Right? And it opened up commonsensemedia.org. Right?
Oh, no. Is this like a religious website?
I tooled around there about us, and they're apparently advocates and teachers and parents who all want to make sure that you never have fun with any media that you watch. You never watch anything taboo or out of like Like, I watched Rocky like before I was 12. Like, we got away with a lot. I remember back in our Blockbuster days, it was like, now, Naomi, you're 14 years old. You can get an R-rated movie now. And I was like, sweet. I mean, I didn't, but I would. I mean, like, I wanted to. I tried to, like, be the B-movie girl back then. And I was like, and I still love a B-movie, but I went through a lot of bad Blockbuster. I saw the movie Slugs. It's not good. Anyways, here's what, and thusly, I'm not applauding commonsensemedia.org.
Right.
But this is what they have to say about this film.
Parents need to know that the movie has many gross, upsetting, and scary moments, including child abuse, torture, murder, perversion, mutilation, a terrifying full immersion baptism, and peril.
So did they talk about the nipples?
No, there's no nudity. unless it falls under the blanket statement perversion.
Nudity is perverse. Well, then I guess everybody's perverted under their clothes.
I've been perverted since the day I was born.
I like how they said the most terrifying part of this film is a full immersion baptism.
And this is the thing. It's like the weakest sauce in terms of terror. Now, like, I mean, we'll get there, but like in the baptism scene, nothing is particularly terrifying except for maybe the people bending over and then like looking up at the sky with their hands and then like bending over again for no good reason.
They're probably a religious organization because of the fact that they pointed out that there's a baptism that's framed as a bad thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, but that's not obvious in the 2 or 3 minutes I was like fiddling around the website.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Can't I?
Yeah.
But like that description, I was like, all right, if you described a movie that way to me on the right day, I'd be like, actually, this is pretty good. I'll pick that one up. I might watch that one. It's like, I mean, like, it just describes it all bad. Like, if you were like, how about this, Lydia? You want to go see a movie about a strange loner who invites 6 children to come to his work and then systematically knocks them off, resulting in one golden child who he bribes with vast riches so that that child would do his bidding.
You're talking about Willy Wonka? I was like, okay. This is like one of those moments where they take like shots of a movie and they rework the trailer so that way it's like looks scary or something.
Yeah, any movie is terrifying if you like look at it through the right lens.
Mm-hmm. An orphaned deer left to fend for itself when its mother's shot in the face. And now, with other outcasts, must learn to live in a world meant to kill. Fire. Murder. Sexual perversion. You know that Thumper was a dick.
He can call me Flower if he wants to.
That's the perversion.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like,
a seriously detached, odorous youngling.
Odorous youngling.
Yeah. They're all like a year old and they're like, that skunk is gonna smash. They call me Thumper. But imagine it dark. They call me Thumper.
Thumper is technically,
because I'm thumping.
You ready for some plot breakdown?
No.
No? Not yet?
Yeah, I'm fine. Let's do it.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, we'll review the movie on our podcast.
I mean, it's like, We have like several hours of audio that we got to get to, so
yeah. It just feels weird because I know we don't have like 4 hours of recording in front of us. And so like drawing this out is only torturing Jen.
In a world where poor Jen has to edit 6 hours of audio, left alone in a basement with nothing but, I don't know, some software and some dreams.
I gave out one of our stickers today.
Yeah.
I walked in to pick up some meds and this chick was, and I had plastic wrap on my arm. And so people know, they're like, oh, you got a tattoo. And everybody mentions it when you're in public, which is why you rush home and take off the plastic.
Yeah.
But this one girl looks at it and she's like, oh, that's cool. I was thinking about getting a nerd tattoo. I'm going to get the Fifth Element.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get the Fifth Element stick on her wrist. And I was like, thought about that tattoo. That's a great tattoo. And we're chatting just a second. I was like, I am that jerk with a podcast. And this is how I've decided to introduce myself like that. I'm like, I have a podcast. And if somebody engages, I'll do it. But like most of the time I just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know. But she was like, oh, and I was like, I only mention it because you want to get a Fifth Element tattoo. And we reviewed that movie and I have some opinions. And she was like, really? I'd like to listen. And I was like, that TikTok went in my head.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I was like, sure, because I have to promote, but like, oh, no, I mean, we're not about advertising. If you're listening to this, it's a pure accident, and thank you for being here. But if you're that lady who I gave a sticker to at the random place I was today.
Hello.
You should totally listen to this episode. It includes female orgasm conversations.
And nipples.
I directed her to that episode. I don't know if she's going to listen beyond one, but hey. Hey, if we so okay, so we don't have a lot of downloads. So if you get a notification that's like, hey, you got one download on Fifth Element, I want to know.
Okay.
I didn't catch your name, so there's no way to like mess with her. Title card, you say? No, no title card. Just New Line Cinema and then
exterior. Dune.
Oh, look, miragey washy bits back and forth. Like, oh, is it hot?
Yeah, because they're in a desert.
Yeah. There, a lady in a white dress on a black horse trotting at the base of a dune.
Mm-hmm. And I had like two references in my notes. The first one was, been through the desert on a horse with no name. Good out the rain. I don't know.
It felt good to get out of the rain. In the desert. I know the whole thing. You can remember your name because there ain't no one for to give you no shame.
And any more we'd have to pay money for.
I mean, this is, first of all, we are doing an interpretation mm-hmm. of said music. Mm-hmm. It falls under fair use because we're not using the original audio. It's a creation. It's our own creation.
And it turns out that
fair use encompasses a lot.
We you can call us pirates, but we fall under the parody laws.
Yeah.
Parody? Parody? Pirates, yeah? Okay.
Parrot.
So sorry.
Nah.
Okay, so she hops off this horse, right? She turns and looks at the horse. And the horse is turned into a black statue.
Right.
And she gives it the sideways smirk. She's like, huh, mm-hmm. genius. A little genius smirk.
And isn't there something else that's specific about this horse that's specifically in your notes that you talked about yesterday?
Oh, yeah. In that, you guys, this is animal number one. And Naomi's random thing I fixated on in this film are the animals.
Always.
Should we spoil it and say how many there are, or do I just mention it a million times at the end?
You just mention it a million times at the end. It's okay.
That's fine. But then you get at least one starting now.
Yeah.
Okay, so then,
and so
it's a black horse, guys. Horse number one. Yeah. Animal number one. Oh, horse number one. Animal number one.
Yeah. And so J-Lo in this beautiful like white dress with this color that goes up.
Mm-hmm. It's high necked, ostrich feathers a bit or something at the top. Mm-hmm. It's called a Cupid's bow neckline, which mm-hmm. is my absolute favorite neckline.
Yeah.
Even though I don't have any boobs, like it's my favorite. And then it's corseted and then it comes down to this flowy white skirt that's very billowy. It's a gorgeous outfit.
Right. And that billow is important because she starts walking on top of the dune and she's like right at the peak of the dune. And she's just walking, you know, that thing that you do in dreams where you're just like walking and you just keep walking.
I haven't done it in a vast space like this, mm-hmm. but I have walked through cities and through like mansions and stuff. Before she starts walking up at our very top of our intro, it does sound very like The Shining, yeah. I would say. It's got this
distinct music.
Yeah, almost it's distorted and yet structured. It feels very much like wong. Wong, mm-hmm. except it's not. It's obviously it's not even borrowing that, but it does have this movie plays so well with sound space the way that it also plays with visual space and somehow misses the dialogue ball like by a bazillion. But like the soundscape is gorgeous. You feel like you're in this very vast, very dry place, and mm-hmm. it's not just the visual, the sound brings you there too.
Right.
Agree, disagree?
Agreed.
Oh, it reminds me of the first parts of Fifth Element in that one.
I remember what you guys said while we were watching it.
Okay, so like, this does happen. As she's walking along, light flashes on her face, and we're in a desert, and she's following this light. But in another movie we reviewed, which I reference because of a random encounter today. Aziz, more light.
Reflection, reflection. And it turns out to be a boy that's reflecting this light.
Yeah, she comes to a dry lake bed. And it's very interesting because the dunes around are these golden slopes that get referenced again and again throughout the whole of the film. But there's the lake bed itself, the silt has dried gray. And then there are these dead black trees and stumps everywhere. It's very bleak.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's very Jalo. A new perfume by...
Oh, it does look like a perfume commercial. I was with some guys at the tattoo parlor today. I had the guys were like referencing Zoolander. And like all of these, like, they were like super conservative on one hand, but then like super... I mean, they're great people. This is not me. But like they started quoting Zoolander at each other and did it for like 10 minutes. And they were like, water is the essence of wetness.
Not in this dream.
That's the opposite town. That's why I got there on that.
Yeah. And she comes to the kid who's like putting the light in her face.
Yeah, it's a short little kid with like a button-up shirt, khaki pants. He's just like he's looking really casual, looks very relaxed actually. Mm-hmm. And he slips the mirror necklace back into his pocket. And then she says the first line of the film, which is,
I thought we were going to go sailing today.
Mm-mm.
Oh, no, no. Oh, she calls him Mr. E?
No.
No?
Thanks for the horse.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's, yeah. I thought we were going to go sailing today. And he's all like, yeah. And he looks to the right and she looks. And then there's this busted boat.
Right.
And she's like, well, this is the thing. Her tone is so consistent through this entire film. And she does sound very much like a therapist. She is not a therapist.
No, she's a social worker.
Right. But she's like, that one's too old at the derelict boat he's managed to summon. And she turns to the right. And then there's a little toy boat. And she goes, well, that's something we can work with, which is every conversation I've ever had with a kid who put in half the effort. That's a starting place. Let's go with that. You know, like she goes to pick up the boat. And I forget.
His name is Edward. She calls him Mr. E.
Which I kind of hate.
Yeah.
I can't help it. Although, like, I've seriously had a student we called Mr. E. And it's really funny when you can't communicate with a student verbally and you call him Mr. E. It's funny. This is funny.
Mm-hmm.
He can't communicate. Mr. E. Get it. But it seems so heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Just laying it on thick.
Yeah. And she picks up the boat and then she hears growling. And she's like, Edward, I thought that we weren't going to do this today.
Yeah, I thought we were going to leave out Moki Loki.
Yeah. Today.
And then I wish it was a recognizable thing. Like, in the way that, like, when you watch The Babadook, like the book itself is, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
But, like, he's like, Moki Loki is the boogeyman. And he's this little kid yelling while he's leaning against a tree, a dead tree. And he's like, Moki Loki wants me where I am. And it's not that high-pitched.
It's also got, I think it's a South African accent. I thought it was a British accent, but it's got sort of a South African sound to it.
Well, yeah, and it makes sense. Like, they, because his parents are super rich, mm-hmm. possibly not American themselves. The dad's voice is weird, so, like, that's a whole thing. Much later, but we do learn that the thing that centers this kid's trauma is a boating accident. So you can see why she's like leaning towards boats, but I don't overall get it because I don't think reintroducing a past trauma is necessarily beneficial to, I mean, like, yes, you have to encounter it. Yes, you have to talk about it. But if you have like a new brain, like a child's brain, like maybe you just walk them away from that thing and try to get them towards something else.
Yeah, because it's definite that he doesn't want to be around water.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to deal with the boats. And as soon as she's like, well, we can work with this, he's like, goes into, you know, like...
It's a self-preservation thing. It's exactly what happens later in the film, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that yesterday in about 2 weeks.
Oh, man. That is... accurate. The monsters we build ourselves to hide inside. Jerk. I love you so much.
Jump scare to Devil Boy.
Yeah, he's got like the squinchy shark face. I don't know if we mentioned it in Willow. I'm pretty sure we talked about the cutscene with the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And that this kid has like a sharky face.
Yeah.
He looks like an orc.
Yeah.
From Lord of the Rings. It's it doesn't count as a jump scare to me. Like, it should.
It tries to be a jump scare.
Yeah, but it's obviously not deftly wielded.
Right. This feels like a jump scare that was put in by one of the executives who was like, this is going to be scary. And it wasn't. If this was in the original script guy who wrote it, I'm sorry, but it wasn't that scary.
Well, I mean, I've worked with children a lot. Have you ever had one try to scare you? It tends to be pathetic and you tend to see it coming.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, it's not going to work, Edward.
My nephew has like scared me before as I'm coming out of the garage and he's like, ah, and I was just like, ah, but it was because my mind was on other stuff. So maybe I'm easy to scare because anxiety. I don't know. But like, I generally jump at jump scares. Like, I'm generally like the easy mark when it comes to movies.
Are you?
I was not scared by this at all.
Not even startled then.
No.
You just, so
that's how I know it was weak, guy, person, whoever put that into the film, whoever you were.
J-Lo's reaction is priceless, though, because she's just like, she very much goes, ugh. And then I felt like there was still room to work with him, the child there, like coming over and being like, this is not your face. And like touching the kid on the face. I'd be like, this is not your face. And you know it's not your face.
Yeah.
And then because it's a dream, maybe just a little slap.
It reminds me of when Bilbo tries to get the ring out of Frodo's hand in the first.
That was truly scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it is sort of it's the same sort of like you filmed it and then you're painting over it with some digital effect. Like it's almost like early days Photoshop where you take a part of the image and you stretch it out.
Like a bad filter on like Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a poorly done version of Black Hole Sun. The video.
Oh man, that video gives me a stomach ache. But what we, okay, our privileged have been handed the things they did pretty okay for a first time around. We've seen it done a bunch of times better since. And so it's easy for us to pass judgment and be like, well, that looks like a screensaver. And that looks like,
right.
That looks like it was done better when ...
Right. This movie is a 21-year-old movie. I would say that this, you can see its age. Like, you know, some movies you don't, but this one you do.
At certain points.
Right.
But there's other stuff that's like timeless that is very like, that's the thing that sucks though, is that there's parts of this that when I saw it, you know, 20 years ago, I was like, wow. Right. Mm-hmm. And then. But now, like, okay, no, I've seen it done better, harder, faster, stronger. Like this.
Right.
But the parts that wow me in this film really do wow me. Right. So she uses the microchip implanted in her hand.
Yeah, she has this microchip that's in between her thumb and her forefinger. And so that way she can grab it with her other hand. And when she does, we get transported to the real world.
Riddle me this, Batman. She, in her real body self, touches her thumb to her patch and then comes out of her sleep state, right?
Right.
Why doesn't she move the rest of the time while she's in the dream state?
I don't know. We don't really see her outside while she's inside a dream.
We do see her outside of her dream while she's in her dream state. And this is what we cut to, is she's in a molded, almost like a human muscle suit, right? And she's being suspended at her neck, her shoulders, her wrists, her lower back, buttock. It's her lower back because her butt's perfect. And then, of course, knees and ankles.
Right.
But it looks very cool.
Yeah. She's also got this like silver thing on top of her face.
A cloth.
Right. And the guy talks about like he says this phrase that gets her out of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye.
420 blackbirds baked in a pie.
So just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
What would your coma phrase?
I don't think it would be a cryptic children's nursery rhyme.
Right.
Like I wouldn't be like, ashes, ashes, and all falls down. Like I think something hilarious, like 24 hours a day. I wanna be sedated. I'm gonna do nowhere to go. Ow. Yep.
Yeah.
How about you?
Oh, mine would be, oh, well, I never was there ever a cat so clever as magical Mr. Mustafa.
Okay, but here's your problem.
No, don't poke a hole in it. It was great.
It's a solid, but you, like, you could literally answer the lead-in with gibberish and it would sound just like the original.
Well, it's not like I'm waking up really, really quickly.
Oh, anyway. Well, never was there. Like, you're lost in there. Now you're stuck in the dream state. And it's just, it's you and cats all the way down. Just like turtle, 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 except it's cats, 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 cats.
And that's when it really becomes a sci-fi film.
Oh, no. The hellscape that would be like a dreamscape of cats. They would be like, let's go on our meowgical journey. And like...
Milk bar.
Oh, no. Milk. Stop it.
Jen, what would yours be?
I think it would be like,
Jenny, don't change your number.
I want to make you mine.
Jenny, don't change your number.
And this is the hard part because, like, waking up and trying to recite numbers.
253. Oh, no.
865-4-5-6-7-0-3-0-9.
Your numerical.
That's the international version of Jenny.
It's like some poor Middle Eastern person gets a phone call and is like, what is this? I've gotten phone calls all day long. And it's like the release date of this film with Jen's version. They keep asking about Jen. Who is Jen? I know no Jen. Just imagine. I'm proud of myself for not trying to do the accent, but like now I feel weird.
Why do you think that they did like a nursery rhyme that probably only white people would know?
I don't know if it's, I know it's a cognitive test.
Right.
I don't know if it's an official cognitive test because it doesn't, I mean, it's obviously what it is, like a cognition check.
Yeah.
That's why when you go to the hospital, they're like, hey, what day is it? Do you remember what day it is? What's your name? Who's the president? Like they ask you, like, I think it's, I watched a TikTok about it. They ask you three questions because then they can tell the doctor, because it's generally like your nurse's aide or your nurse who's doing that. They ask you three questions because then they give each other like a scale. They're like, oh, she's 3 out of 3. And then you know that you're cognitively there. If you get a 0 out of 3, you're probably pretty screwed up, right? If you only get your name right, but you don't know what day it is or who the president is, you know.
I think it also probably acts as, what are they called, tokens in Inception?
Yeah,
it's like you're coming out of this and they're saying words to you that help reassure you that you're not still in the thing.
Yeah, it could be a check. The weird thing is they're locked in this room, right? And they have to key card or password themselves into this room. And we don't ever know why they have to be so separate, except for that it's helpful for plot devices later on. So, like, why you don't have somebody right there next to you, like, putting their hand on your arm to give you, like, a physical center as well as a visual center as well as, like a comfort, especially if it's very disorienting coming out. I don't know, man. If you were like, hey, can you quote some Bob Dylan? If I was waking up, I'd be like, no, I can't.
Right.
Thanks for coming. It'd be much quicker to be like, what's your name?
Right.
What day is it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like a serial killer has taken over your mind? That's a pet theory of mine.
Well, that last one would be very difficult because what if a serial killer did take over your mind?
They know all of the bad nursery rhymes.
They would also be the ones who would say no. So if it either way, that wouldn't be a very good question because then if it's not, then it's no. And if it is, then it's no. Because serial killers lie.
You're standing in front of two people. One of them always tells the truth, and one of them always tells lies. How do you know which one?
They give you the answer in Jim Henson's The Labyrinth, but yeah. We only watched... Guillermo del Toro. Why am I so bad with names? But we only watched... we've all seen The Labyrinth, but like yeah. Pan's Labyrinth is like... It doesn't give you that answer.
Right.
I know the solution is asking what the other guy or something would say and then like doing the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
What would he tell me?
Mm-hmm.
What would he tell me to do?
Right.
Logical fallacies are hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once she says in The Labyrinth what the answer is, they're still like, is that right?
I don't know.
And
I never understood it.
It's true. Yeah.
Applauders, we now transition you into the rest of the episode.
Yay!
Oh, no, that's later. Oh, we already did that. That was yesterday.
Okay.
In 2 weeks? Yeah, in 2 weeks, it's yesterday. But, like, do you just snap out like a beatnik poetry?
We fixed it. Nothing was ever wrong.
So they get Catherine out of her stasis, and that's when they're informed that the boy's parents want to talk. And so they have a discussion. There's the two doctors who oversee everything. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Lopez's character, Catherine, who is a social worker.
Dr. Marion, whose name I remember, and white doctor man guy, I don't remember his name.
That's okay. He's been in a lot of stuff. If you ever like see him and stuff, you're like, hey, I recognize that guy, but I don't know his name because IMDb is relatively new.
Fun. While we wait for that Google search result, I've entitled this scene between the two doctors, J-Lo and the parents, Beleaguered Parent BS.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and I know that being a billionaire doesn't make things less difficult, but like, you've got all this money. Like, life isn't that hard for you.
If life is hard as a billionaire, you can literally just let go of your wealth.
They say after $75,000 a year, you're not any happier.
Correct.
So like,
My sympathy goes out the door.
I'm so sorry that you're doing so well.
Also, if I had $1 billion and a kid that I cared about, like my own kid, was needing help, you can bet all that money is going to seeing like, yeah, let's try something experimental to see if we can get them out of a coma because they're a kid and I have large amounts of wealth.
And I know this does not sit well with a lot of people that I know and love, but I am not above throwing money at a problem. Most of the time, it solves so many problems. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I don't know. There's a lot of people with mental health issues. You know what? Here's the thing. Let's throw some money at it. And you'd be like, well, how does mental health issues get solved with money? I don't know how to else get a psychiatrist involved.
Yeah.
Just throw some money at it.
Right.
Oh, okay. You think they need antipsychotic meds or something like that? Guess what you should do?
Pay for the antipsychotic meds.
Throw some money at it. Yeah. I don't know how to pay for drugs otherwise. I'm an idiot, a financial liberal, a fiscal liberal, they would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it that I will never get love about that. But I don't know how to solve a number of problems without throwing money at it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Bootstraps, get the job done, work hard, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to build a deck for my house. You want to know how I'm going to get the deck built for my house?
Throw a bunch of money at it?
There are people who know how to build decks. And you know how you get them to come to your house and build a deck?
Throw a bunch of money at them?
Oh my God. Yes.
Actor's name is Dylan Baker. He's been in lots of television mostly. He's been in House, Blind Spot, Monk, Ugly Betty.
I'd probably know him from Monk. No lie.
Spider-Man 3.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So, okay, but with between parent BS and we should get back to it. Don't we cut back and forth between things now? We're doing our classic split edit deal.
Well, I think so. But I would like to pull into the exposition station. Woo woo. And just let you guys know, this boy is there, Mr. E is in a coma. His parents are billionaires. Mm-hmm. They've been working on this like 18 months. And even though his mom seems like super supportive about like this whole venture because money, his dad is just kind of like, I don't know if I want to, you know.
I haven't seen any tangible results.
Right. And I can understand, you know, if you're not seeing any proof, maybe you're going to want to put your money towards something else that is.
Well, I like that he's just like, it might all be a hallucination. And I was like, give me the job where I drop acid, hang out with an unconscious person and be like, yes, I get it. There's a horse. There's some sand dunes.
Later. Right.
Like, there was a boat and he was a bad guy, but he was a cute kid. Blah, blah.
Right.
And just trip out for a living. Like, that's J-Lo's whole bent in this movie.
But it becomes something where the team of scientists that's doing this one thing is given another 6 months to actually produce some results. And the other important thing is that the parents aren't sure if Catherine is suitable for it because she is just a social worker and not actually someone who has like a degree in psychology.
Yeah, but she certainly seems like a psychology nerd.
Mm-hmm.
We do cut to animal number two.
Oh, yeah, we got a dog.
Nope.
No?
That's number three.
Oh, okay.
Number two is a tortoise.
He's
walking across the desert. I assume he's a tortoise. I'm no turtle expert. Please correct me.
He is a tortoise.
He's just walking through a field and he's cruising along. He's like, hey, there's some oil field things, some oil rigs. I'm a tortoise in a field. I'm just hanging out, not being aquatic.
Yeah.
Please don't throw your tortoises in water.
They're not equipped for it. Certain turtles can survive in the water. They are called water turtles or aquatic turtles.
How about this? If you don't know, put them next to the water. Yeah. They'll figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you if you can tell, because water turtles have webbed feet.
Oh.
Tortoises and box turtles have stumps.
Clumpy nail bits, mm-hmm. like an elephant almost.
Right.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Plus, also, tortoises won't be super excited when you get them near the water, but a water turtle will, like, lose their They'll be like, yes!
Yeah.
I was wondering where this was. What's that turtle that's got, like, the pointy snoot, my guy?
Snapping turtle?
No, they've got like a big, wide, bitey magai.
Oh, yeah, like the ones where it's like a really long nose, like a Pinocchio nose.
Yeah, there's a guy I like on YouTube who was sold one to eat, and then he Googled it and he found out that it was a rare turtle, and he was like, oh no, and he kept it in like this hotel bathroom until he could figure out what to do with it, and then he released it in the river.
I think it's a mud turtle.
Something like that. For real, the long snooted boy. Okay, but then we cut from the tortoise to a dog with his face out the window, and he looks like a happy boy.
Oh, he probably is a happy boy, because his owner treats him really well, even though he doesn't treat other people very well.
People aren't happy boys.
Yeah. So we have this pickup truck that is driving through this deserted area. It's like, it really looks like it's some of that farm area where the grass is like really, it's dry grass.
It's brown season is what I call it in the Northwest,
yeah.
Where we are, where lots of stuff is often green. But if you cross over the mountains, anytime after the weather starts to warm up, it's just brown from here until you get to some actual water.
Right. And this is the scene that kind of cuts between this and everything else that's going on with Catherine and the coma kid.
And the parents who are just like, we've spent so much money. And she's like, with all due respect, I didn't design the protocol. I'd rather not do it this way. And they're like, oh, I don't see any results. It could be a hallucination. And then truck, tortoise, dog comes back, and it's like, then it's Dr. Miriam and Catherine sitting together, and it's like, well, we've done some fancy footwork. White generic doctor guy got us 6 more months, but he had to work really hard. And she's like, look, I want to reverse the feed, which is Chekhov's plot point.
Yeah.
Because it's got to happen. I want him to come into my brain instead of me going in his. We don't know how that would work. Blah, blah, blah. Back and back. Does this scene break the Bechdel-Myers test? No, it doesn't. Fantastic. High fives all around.
Yeah.
Then that part is, a body gets dumped into the truck.
Right. Oh, but before we see that, that's when we see the guy going into this like silo area.
Oh, he goes into the silo area. Then we cut to her, Catherine, at home.
No. He goes down to the silo area and we see this guy.
With, oh, my God. Yeah, is that part?
It's that part where like there's this woman who's just like floating dead in water. At least we think she's dead. And then he
walks over and he puts his hand on the glass and you think, oh, is he sad for a moment?
And then she like starts convulsing
and he's like, ah! And he like runs around this table behind this monitor and he like clamps his hand over his dick and he's like, ah! And I think we conclusively decided that he wasn't jerking off at that moment.
Right. But you had kind of something funny to say when we were watching it now.
I don't remember what I said.
It was like, seriously, Carl, get it together. You just killed a woman.
Right. Okay, so my inner came out real hard and I was like, aw, did the dead lady scare you, Carl? Did the lady you made dead scare you, Carl? So sorry about that, the lady you made dead wiggled and it scared you, Carl. Oh, by the way, this is Carl.
This is played by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
And he like empties out all of the water in this tank. So, and there's like this very obvious valve next to the tank.
Yeah. And then you see it shooting outside where the dog is sitting really patiently, doing really good. I think it's weird that much water could be dumped out and there's no like foliage that grows where the water it has chlorine in it. But like, if that much water got dumped out in such a dry environment, I would expect weeds or something to grow and like denote that.
Or at the very least, there would be like a puddle.
Okay, so then body transport.
Yep.
Then we come back to her apartment. Guess what?
She's smoking weed.
Well, yeah, she is. But guess what before that?
Oh, there's a cat?
That's animal number 4. We've got horse, tortoise, dog, cat, 4. And the cat's like laying on the hood of a car. And then he goes, and then he walks across the car and he's like, I'm going inside because my mom is home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so and then
she's totally smoking a joint. And she does what we all... Nope, what I used to do. I was like, if you smoke a joint, but then the paper catches fire, you like use the puff you just took to like out the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
Yeah. And then she goes over to the fridge and the cat's over there and she's like, oh, would you like some milk? Which you should not give milk to a cat.
Ding, ding, ding. You have it right. Mm-hmm. Because for the second time in a different movie, if you'd like to hear us rant about cats drinking milk, please listen to our Cats, the musical episode when they go to the milk bar.
It's a horrible, horrible stereotype.
Cats cannot process milk like that. Stop giving your cats milk. A little bit on occasion, but acting like it's this treat that you could totally give them every day.
Right.
You don't invite your lactose intolerant friends out for fondue. And you don't give your cat milk.
Right. And but it's an important point because we transition to the woman who just died coming out of a bleach bath.
Yeah. And she looks like she's in a milk bath, but she's totally being bleached.
Right. And so she this dead body gets carried over and, you know, gets cleaned off.
Oh, can I say that when J-Lo is in a button up shirt and she's got like these black underoos on, she looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love her hair.
Her hair is great, but she is the epitome of what I want to look like when I'm being just sexy by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a little button up that just covers, like, half a cheek and then, like, a little black bikini bottom sticking out the bottom of this, like, glorious. And I get it. It's her butt. But, like, her butt is just, like, this is, like, peak J-Lo butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Yes. Oh, my.
Really good.
I want it.
Yeah.
I want it. I want to have it. I want to look at it. Kind of want to touch it a little bit.
So, you know, like the first thing that this reminded me of rewatching it again, it reminded me of, have you seen Inside by Bo Burnham?
Yeah.
White woman Instagram song. He's like posing with this like button down shirt and his butt sticking out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I love this whole like moment that we're in where cis straight men are, you know, just kind of like trying to get into their femininity a little ways. Like, you know, I see these TikToks of like men putting on dresses and being like, oh wow, I just look really good because dresses make everybody look good.
I'm down for as toxic masculinity decreases, I feel like we are going to see more and more feminine men just living their best life. Like, do it. I don't care. Look, does it matter? Okay, here's the thing. Drinking black coffee every morning from McDonald's made you sad, right?
Right.
But drinking a mocha caramel crunch frappuccino from Starbucks has made you happy because sweet, happy, fun drinks are sweet, happy, fun drinks for a reason.
Right.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Thoroughly.
Yeah.
Unapologetically. And then maybe you're happier as a person.
Right. I mean, if I'm happier because I have a donut, then isn't that better than, you know, having a carrot and being a...
Agreed. If we go for the broader stroke of the film, if I prefer to play with this toy and not with that toy, it does not make me... One of my favorite memes is, do you use your genitalia to play with this toy? Right? If the answer is no, then it's for a boy or a girl. If the answer is yes, then it is not for a child. Right? So, like, maybe we don't harsh on some freaking kids for whatever the heck makes them happy, and letting people acknowledge what brings them joy and letting them avoid, for the most part, the things that give them pain or discomfort. Like, we're going to solve a lot of the world's problems by letting people self-determine.
Right. So Catherine enjoys her off time with a joint.
Mm-hmm.
Carl enjoys his off time with a corpse.
Okay, and
there's a difference between the two.
There's a boundary there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all agree that pot is wrong.
Oh wow. That was a swing in the other direction.
You know, non-violent drug offenses do not make me mad at all. Like, just do it. Whatever. I don't give a
it was
a health problem we're gonna have to deal with later on, and it's certainly not something I care about. I do care. I nearly always care when it comes to killing people.
Yeah.
Nearly always.
Right.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining our Twisted Minds for part one of our month-long walkthrough of 2000's The Cell. We still have three more parts to send to your synapses and can't wait to discuss what dreams may come. We're celebrating the mental health podcasting genre this month, and we've got a few lesser-known shows that we think you might be interested in following. Not Before Coffee, with host Ray, sheds light on the topic of mental health while discussing books, film, and television. And Capes on the Couch is a podcast that dives deep into the mental health of some of your favorite superheroes. Check out this week's description for links to these shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and J-Lo's butt double, Jen. Did you catch Naomi talking about giving a stranger a cool shocked and applaud sticker? Well, we'd love to send you one too. Email your snail mail address to shockedandapplaud@gmail.com and we'll send it to you along with unhealthy levels of gratitude. We'll be back Tuesday, August 17th with part two of our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.